Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm just saying from my heart to you as a pastor, no matter what you do, I will have mercy on you. And I expect you to always have mercy on one another. Amen.
The man is in jail. He's accused of sexually abusing a child. Jordan Webb is charged with second-degree sex abuse. Court records show the victim was under the age of 12. Webb is being held in the Webster County Jail on $500,000 cash bond.
It's never your position to take God's position concerning what he's to do with a situation. You be merciful.
You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
Hey everybody, on today's episode of the Preacher Boys podcast, I'm sitting down with Elizabeth Sine. She's a former student at Harvest Baptist Bible College in Fort Dodge, Iowa. We talk a little bit about the strange environment at the church and college, as well as the recent scandal with one of their missionaries, Jordan Webb. She knew Jordan from a very early age at Mountain View Baptist Church in Hesperia, California, and reconnected with him at college. For those of you that don't know, ex-missionary Jordan Webb was arrested on April 25th, 2022 at the Fort Dodge home of Cameron Giovanelli, a registered sex offender who we've covered on the show before. According to testimony from Webster County Attorney's Office investigator Larry Headland, Webb was also driving Giovanelli's car that week. He was charged with second-degree sexual abuse with persons under the age of 12, a Class B felony, and incest, a Class D felony, as well as child endangerment, which is an aggravated misdemeanor. Marvin Smith IV, the assistant pastor and missions director at Harvest Baptist Church, submitted a letter in support of Webb for his bond hearing. In a text message conversation submitted into evidence by the state, Smith said to Webb, quote, "I'm going to need to write a check to you for the lawyer fee. Pastor said it will look better than the church being responsible for extra costs after the $25,000," end quote. So clearly we have a church here that has a history of numerous allegations of abuse within their troubled teen home. They have a history of standing with predators and pedophiles like Cameron Giovanelli and Jordan Webb. And in today's episode, while I'm not talking to someone directly connected to Webb or directly connected to the Giovanelli story, I am talking to someone who can give us a sense of boots on the ground, what it's like on the compound of Harvest Baptist Bible College and the church. This episode, I think, is really fascinating. My guest, Elizabeth, was absolutely amazing. I love talking with her, and I know you're going to love hearing her insights. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into that interview, and I hope it opens your eyes to what the environment at this organization is like. All right, guys, let's get into the show. Elizabeth, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the show.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to talk with you. And I mean, Harvest has come up a billion times now over the last 2 years, different stories. And I would say that people that listen to the show are not fans of Harvest at this point, probably for some valid reasons. But before we jump into that, which is, I know, what people want to hear about, I do want to go just back to the beginning of your story, like, how did you get introduced to the world of independent fundamental Baptists? Like, what was your kind of starting point with that?
My parents, my dad and my stepmom, went to Mountain View Baptist Church in Hesperia, California, which is the same church that Jordan Webb was going to. He was actually a student in my, my dad taught Sunday school and all that, and he was one of the students. But that's how I got started. But my parents ended up leaving Mountain View Baptist Church to go start another church called Mountain View Baptist Church in Cedar City. And we planted a church there. We stayed there for 4 years. They just celebrate their like 20th anniversary. I think it was last year. And then after 4 years, we moved to Salmon, Idaho, and we started Mountain View Baptist Church in Salmon, Idaho.
The franchise is strong, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And that church completely failed. It was the most remote city in America at the time. It took 2 hours to drive to the nearest Walmart, and there were more bars than there were churches. And so that church just failed. And then I moved to Faith Baptist Church, where my uncle was the pastor. And through that, that's how I found Harvest Baptist Church, because Marvin Smith actually came to a spiritual warfare conference, and he was scouting out anybody who was in high school and telling them, you need to come to this college. God will lead you here. If you all you want to do is ministry, don't go to any of the other Baptist colleges. Mm-hmm. Come ours, because we focus on ministry. What it means was they weren't accredited. They weren't a real. Right. That's the translation. So that was my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of blew my mind when we talked a little while back, and you were saying, oh, he used to do those spiritual warfare conferences, which it seems like he does those like twice a year at Harvest. But I didn't know he took that show on the road and kind of went from church to church doing it.
The church paid for his flight, for his hotels. I mean, nothing came out of pocket for him. And then he would use the same exact curriculum that he uses in the college, because the spiritual warfare like curriculum is a class in college that you take the entire time, because they want to make sure you know what demons are and how to handle them, and that it's not at all of that. Maybe I was just, you know, pansexual this entire time. It was a demon inside of me, you know, and they want to teach you how to defend against that. And it felt very like, almost like an anime. Like it was so weird from even my independent fundamental Baptist, like growing up, Harvest Baptist was a whole different extreme level.
Yeah, when I pray, I'm praying in the name of Christ, through God, yes, but listen to me carefully. Christ lives in me, and I can speak to the dark realm by praying, warfare praying. Amen?
The way that they present it was just, yeah, it's very different than a lot of Baptist churches. I mean, some would get into demons, and, you know, they would spiritualize, you know, if there was a bad news report, oh, there's an attack, it's a satanic attack on the church, that sort of thing. Yes. But it seems like he really takes it to the next level with his approach. And I mean, it really, you know, I try not to be the tinfoil hat person, and it's getting harder and harder not to be. But I feel like you can look at certain people and the things that they preach the most about, and it's almost like they're prepping for something bad to happen and come out. So they've already got a pre-written answer, you know? Yeah. And I see this with, you know, people that, you know, just simple verses in the independent Baptist movement, like, you know, Jesus said, if people hate you, it's because they hated me first, you know? And so anytime that someone doesn't like you, it couldn't be that you're being a jerk. It's because you're following Jesus and they hate that, you know? Or if, you know, they say that you need to have a certain type of bus that's safer for the kids at your Christian school. This was a common thing in California when they were trying to push people away from the older diesel buses. It was like the government is trying to attack Christian schools. And it's like, they're actually trying to protect kids at your school, you know, like it's just a bizarre thing that what gets labeled persecution, what gets labeled an attack. And there's already this predetermined response to all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And it's also like when I was there, it was almost like you weren't a real Christian if you weren't being persecuted. If you aren't being persecuted, you aren't doing things the right way because the world is supposed to hate us. That's not exactly what they said, but that was exactly what was taught.
Yeah.
And I mean, even I think that's a thing within fundamental Baptists in general. I remember being like 8 years old and when Columbine and all that happened, and if we had to, would we sacrifice our lives for God if that was the case? And I remember fantasizing about that and how would I react? And it was just, it's so unhealthy. Going through these life threatening situations and determining as an 8 year old, I am willing to die for this religion that I didn't have a choice but to be in, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. That was definitely something. I saw a TikTok the other day. Someone was talking about that, like the preaching about, you know, when you're a little kid in Sunday school and they're telling you about, you know, Columbine, and this girl said, you know, I believe. And I remember stories of, you know, missionaries being in other countries, someone coming on the bus with a gun, you know, and like all those things. And you're like, as a kid, you don't even know how to you're just like, I hope that doesn't happen here. It feels like it could happen, you know, and it's a scary thing when you're a little kid who doesn't really even understand life and death at that point. So obviously in retrospect, there's a lot of things we can look at and go, you know, well, that's kind of crazy. But you ended up going to Harvest, the college. So did that happen out of feeling like you needed to, were you bought in when you went, like how, at the time, did it seem so off base?
To me, it felt like a natural flow of how my life was supposed to go. From the time, I can't even remember how young I was, I had dedicated my life to God. I went to Harvest Baptist to be a preacher's wife or a missionary's wife. That was my only life goal from childhood. I wasn't, oh, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer.
Two options.
Right. Yeah. And it was either go to West Coast Baptist College, which I wasn't going to be able to afford because I was going to be paying for college on my own. And I raised all of my money for the first year of Harvest in a summer because it was like $3,000 or $4,000. And I was 16, 17 year old who was determined to do what was right.
Well, say what you will, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah, I know. Extremely cheap, but they like, and that's why so many people go there is because I can get a college degree, and it's not a college degree, it's a piece of paper learning theology, you know, it's not a degree. But they don't tell you any of that. So I was like, well, why am I going to go to West Coast when I can go here for cheaper and be self-sufficient and solely focus on getting my ministry started?
Right. How many were there? Because I had never even heard of the college. I mean, maybe I had, but I don't recall ever hearing of Harvest. Like I've heard, you know, I grew up West Coast. It was like West Coast, Golden State, which we didn't like because we were on the West Coast. And there was that rivalry that everyone knew. You know, you had First Baptist Church of Hammond, which were like kind of the old school group. You had Maranatha, you had Pensacola, Bob Jones. But it's like, I have no frame of reference for Harvest outside of the last 2 years, just seeing all of the controversy that's come out of that school that has somehow slipped under the radar up until recently. At the time that you went, how many students were actually at the college? Like, what was the environment like when you first arrived on campus?
So for every class combined, I would say maybe 100, maybe. And I don't even like, and I feel like that is still including the Anchor Home, even though that wasn't a college, but it was on the third level of the college building. So they came to all of the lunches, to all of the, you know, they were a part of everything, even though they were not even adults yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Anchor was like, I mean, minor. I mean, it was like preteen and teen, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
That was a horrible experience for them, too.
Yeah, they absolutely
got it worse than we did by far.
Yeah, there's tons of bizarre stories just out of that group. I mean, so what was the experience like? I mean, so you felt like it was a natural progression. It was obviously, you realize it was even crazier than the craziness that you were originally in. How quickly did kind of the rose-colored glasses fade after arriving? Or was it something where it was like, this is pretty cool, and then there was like a boom, this is really off, you know? Like, how did that kind of transpire?
So I would say it only took about 2 to 3 weeks for me to be like, this is weird, something's not right. And so I got there, I moved into my dorm with 2 other girls. Everything was going normal. My dad promised me, because I wasn't allowed to date until I was 18, until I was graduated high school, so I could focus on my school. Mm-hmm. And my dad promised me, when you get to college, you're going to meet the man of your dreams, so you get to date. And I get there, I meet my now husband of almost 9 years, mm-hmm. and we start talking, and they first of all didn't like my husband, because my husband didn't grow up in church. He was it was a way for him to escape mm-hmm. a really bad situation at home. But he had a regular brain, not a brainwashed one.
Sure.
And he questioned every single thing that happened. Mm. And I gravitated toward him because I'm a very curious person, and having someone the complete opposite of me I love my husband. He questioned everything. And I love that, because I had never really seen that in my life.
Right.
I thought that's what Christianity is, that the Bible says you have to question, you know, your preacher, mm-hmm. like that, right. But at Harvest, you don't have that right. You have to follow the rules exactly as they are. And if you get questioned, if you question them, they don't like you, and they start targeting you with more demerits. Every demerit is $1. And my husband, I think, owed a couple of $100, which he didn't have, you know. But it was probably, I think it was 3 weeks, because my husband had given me like a necklace, and they literally took it away, because they're like, you aren't allowed to date. You can't give gifts. You can't do anything. And then my husband ended up having a bleeding ulcer. And I mean, it was throwing up blood and had to be on a liquid diet. And he couldn't afford to buy top ramen. And the college refused to help him with that liquid diet. So I went to go, I bought him like a 20 pack of top ramen so he could, you know, not throw up and bleed. And they gave him demerits for that, like 50 demerits, because he accepted a gift from me.
Yeah.
And it was just, the Bible says nothing about that. And even though I was raised fundamental Baptist, I was raised, you know, your doctrine back and forth, and what the Bible says is what the Bible says. You can't add and you can't subtract to it.
Right.
And I noticed they were adding all these weird things, and I was like, that's not biblical.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, about 3 weeks, and me and my husband didn't even make it a full semester, because we ended up having premarital sex in the chapel.
Oh, wow. You left that part out when you first talked. You're like, if you guys would have been okay with the ramen, we would have stopped there.
It's just, when you're told no to something, human nature is you keep pursuing it. Mm-hmm. And I knew me and my husband were meant to be, and that has been apparent throughout our entire marriage, and I'm so glad. But we got kicked out, and when we got kicked out, they took my debit card, they took my car keys, they took my phone, because they didn't want me to be in contact with Arthur. They kicked Arthur off the campus, and then threatened the police, or threatened to call the police on him for trespassing if he tried to come and get me, because I wanted to leave with him. Mm-hmm. I was so done with I had been called a whore because I wore a maxi skirt and eyeliner and red lipstick at the same mm-hmm. time. And I had a very vintage look back then. Like, I was not happy. And they ended up locking me in a room with another girl, like a bodyguard, another college student who was a senior at that time, mm-hmm. so that I couldn't do what I wanted. And I thought that was normal because I was so innocent. I didn't know how the real world worked. I didn't know that's false imprisonment. That's mm-hmm. exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But, and then my dad ended up flying to come get me, and we drove the car back. I was able to talk to my husband one last time on the phone before my parents cut off any contact. And then it took about 3 months for me to find him. We eloped, and that's that.
There you go. Yeah. It is an interesting thing, because I look back, you know, at different stories and like even in my own life, and it's like you look at like, well, we're going to call the police, you know, and it's like the police wouldn't have been pro them taking your debit card and your phone and your keys, you know, but it is when you're in it, it's like your chain of command in life is like there's the church and then there's like everybody else, you know, and if someone asked me that. Because I, you know, anyways, listen to the show, you know, we had a sexual abuser that was relocated to our church when I was in high schooler, and I was the first one to find out. And I had a few people that have asked me, you know, why didn't you call the police, or why didn't you do this? I would recommend to myself if I knew what I know now. But at the time, it wasn't even an option in my mind. It was like, I'm going to tell my parents, my youth pastor, and the pastor, oh, they're not doing anything, we're stuck. Checkmate, yeah. You know? And it's like, you know, at the time, I mean, he literally had a warrant out. Like, if I would have called the police, he would have been arrested and taken back to Chico, you know? So it's like, it's things like that, though, that just, those environments can be so dangerous. And it's why I wanted to have you on, because obviously, you know, and we'll talk about Jordan in a minute. Like, obviously you weren't a victim of abuse in that regard, you know, from someone like that. But, you know, it's that old cliche saying, but it takes a village to raise a child, takes a village to abuse one. Like, there has to be a system in which abusers can thrive. And some of those things just come from ignorance on the part of the people who are in the congregation or in the school. I mean, that's just, and I think that's evident through your story, just sharing that little detail. So thanks for doing that. So I do want to talk a little bit about Jordan, because this is it's a small world after all, you know, like you were in Hesperia, California at Mountain View, which was actually, it was pretty close to where we were at. We were in Banning, California. Okay. And so I was familiar with the name of that church, and I'm pretty sure there was some crossover in some activities or events or something. Sure. I mean, again, small world. But you went to school with Jordan there, correct? He was there before you.
He was there before us. His family ended up taking over the church when my great uncle went to go start Faith Baptist Church in Spanish Fork, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very prominent. I mean, his parents were very prominent in the church. Every potluck was at their church. They had, or at their house. They had a really gorgeous pool, which I was always jealous of.
Mm-hmm.
I went on vacations with the Webb family to Knott's Berry Farm. And I mean, I don't even remember what we were exactly doing, but I remember we were driving through St. George and we had to stop at a hotel. Like, we slept in the same hotel room all the kids slept in the same hotel room, you know? And so my dad also had this list of people that he had already approved for me to marry, and Jordan Webb was absolutely one at the top on those lists because he was such a man of God. It's so scary now, you know, right. Like
he fit the mold of exactly what he's supposed to be.
Absolutely. My husband didn't, even though my husband, a good man who's taken care of me for 9 years, even though he went blind, like My husband is the best man in the entire world. And everybody hated him. But Jordan Webb, everybody loved him. And now look what's happened, you know?
Yeah, right. What was your take on him? I mean, were you interested at all? Or was he off-putting to you? Like, I mean, because the big question is always like, did anybody see that there were red flags around this guy? And it seems like no one did.
It came as a shock to me when I saw the news on Facebook, but I was a touch deprived, puberty driven child. All the people that my dad had on the list, I would have been okay marrying because I just wanted to be loved. And if they love God that much, of course they would love me that much. It was no time on. There had always been these rumors or jokes that Jordan was gay because he was more effeminate than most other boys. And my dad was a little like, you know, that's just who he is. He's not actually gay, you know. But he was always, I remember every single man in that church telling him that he needed to man up and that he shouldn't be that way. And that amount of shame will carry it for the rest of your life if you don't take care of it. You know, if you don't accept it and embrace who you actually are as a person, you know?
Yeah. And it's a brutal environment for that to be rumored about you. And, you know, and that's something that, you know, again, like over the past couple of weeks, you know, I've had IFB pastors that have, you know, gone on rants about me and, you know, that's been, he's going to end up there, you know, he's going to, you know, and my wife was like, why are they even talking about that? Like, it's such a, so out of left field. I said, that's the worst thing you could call somebody in that world. Like, that is the worst insult you could give to a man in the IFB is that, oh, you're gay. You know, like you've literally that's like, you know, the N word, not so much off limits, but that was a big, like,
yeah,
if you get called that, like, that's rough.
I'm concerned for people like Eric because they will suffer judgment, but I'm not going to lie about it. There's part of me that says he's been given over a reprobate mind. And if he is not moved to, I believe he has moved. Maybe he's not moved. He's always been there. But I believe he's very, very compassionate and accepting to the LGBT crowd and homosexuality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think if he doesn't end up there himself, someone in his family will be. And it's just that's the direction it's going to go. And that's where it goes.
I mean, and that was from while we were still in Hesperia. So I was still in first grade. And those rumors were flying. Those statements made, and
Okay. So this was kind of the rumors floating around him at the time, which can be, you know, it can be really rough, and it can do a lot of damage to be just bullied in general. And I want to just say right now as a disclaimer, that doesn't excuse any of the things that we're going to talk about coming forward, and a lot of really bad things happen to a lot of people. Nothing can happen to you that excuses, you know, the type of acts that we're going to be discussing involving Jordan. So I want to say that out of the gate, but we can acknowledge that's a bad position to be in within that world. That's a tough place to be. It seems like the rumors were semi-correct. We can talk about in a maybe 100% correct. We can talk about that in a minute. But first, just tell me, so like you reconnected with him in college. So like when he, was he there already when you arrived? Did he show up at the same time? Like how did that happen?
He already been there for years. He, I'm pretty sure he was in his senior year and I was going into my freshman year. So there is some time apart, but him and my husband shared the same dorm room. I can't quite remember that right now. I'm pretty sure they shared the same dorm room. I can't remember what the word is. Is it not RA? Like the person who runs the dorms, like who looks over.
Like dorm supervisor or hall. I think in West Coast. Yeah, West Coast, it was the dorm supervisor. And then there was like a hall leader or something. I forget what what's called.
Yeah. He was that. And you weren't allowed to like really have movies or anything like that. And Jordan would let all the boys watch like The Dark Knight and, you know, normal new movies, but would not ever be.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Out in harvest, you know?
Right?
So he was living one way for the church and then living a whole different way in the dorms.
You don't say. He was living two different lives, huh?
Interesting, right?
What a segue. So and Abby was his wife, which normally and I'll explain this later, normally I wouldn't even mention her in the story, but part of her involvement in this situation makes me really upset. And so, and again, there's systems that protect these people. And one of the unfortunate things, when we talk about the nuance of this, is a lot of times that's spouses, that's family. But you've mentioned to me, like, they were kind of the ideal IFP love story. So she was the dean's daughter. He was like the all-star IFB preacher boy. So they connected. Like, were that everybody, I'm assuming, was just hyped for that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like, everybody looked up to them. I looked up to them. That is the relationship I went to Harvest to find. And it was really infuriating to see how she treated other girls in her, because she was also dorm soup. So they were both dorm supervisors at the same time in their senior year. The year after, I know they got married. Abby really gets me frustrated because she's the one who really put a lot of hurt in my heart with Christianity because of how speak to of my being, how I was acting and stuff like that. So I'm sorry about that. They were the perfect couple. They were going to be missionaries. They did everything right. They were perfect in our eyes. Absolutely perfect in our eyes. We would never see a flaw from them unless it was one-on-one in a dorm room where no one else can tell you, or no one else can be there to witness it. And so that was frustrating, but they were still the ideal couple. They were still what I was reaching for when I went to Harvest.
Yeah, so everything from the church's eyes was, this is like the power couple. They're going to go do big things. And they got married in pretty much immediately out of college. Started headed mission field of mind. Yeah.
Jordan and Abby were privileged to personally lead dozens of teenagers to the Lord by going classroom to classroom with the missions team when they visited the islands in March of 2016. The young people and teachers alike were hungry for further teaching, but many have no way to travel to the nearest Bible-believing church. A regular weekly presence in the schools is necessary to keep new believers from falling prey to false doctrine. Jordan's collegiate volleyball coaching experience provides another avenue to reach the young people through camps and regular coaching sessions. The Webbs have been extensively trained in biblical counseling, something the administration of the schools is also asking to receive. Harvest Baptist Bible College is working with dozens of national pastors throughout the Caribbean islands to create a network of local Bible institutes, with a Bible college in St. Lucia, where students who wish to complete a four-year degree can come to finish their schooling. Jordan is already involved in this endeavor, and his private pilot's license will be a tool to more closely connect the churches.
To this point, you know, some rumors I'm assuming were still littering about, but overall it seemed like there was no warning sign of anything like what ended up happening.
I would have never thought. I know Jordan ran the church buses. He taught kids all the time. He, you know, that was his passion, and he was great with kids, fantastic with kids. And that's one of the reasons that he was on my list, or my dad's list, of you can marry this guy, because he was so good with kids. He had this goofy like aura about him, and he just, my jaw dropped when I saw the article online. I would have never in a million years thought that. But that also taught me to never think about things like that, or to even know what the red flags are, signs of that are.
Yeah. I was on a podcast last night, and their show hasn't launched yet, but I'll link to it in the show notes when it does. But it was on a podcast with three former Mormons, and they were asking me questions about clergy abuse and things like that. And they asked that, they said, what are some of the warning signs, or how do we identify predators? And I said, well, the bad news is you're probably not going to be able to. Like, the people who are predators are just that, you know, like if you think about the word and you think about animals that are predators, what are they really good at? They're good at blending in. They're good at looking inconspicuous until they attack, or until they strike, or until they do whatever their goal is to do. And so it's not, Hollywood has programmed us. I sound like Marvin Smith. Hollywood is programming us. But Hollywood has programmed us to look for this greasy, tattooed guy with a scar on one cheek in the back, you know, with a twirling a pocket knife, like full blown, like, clearly, this is like the most villainous figure that you can imagine. And it's not usually that person. Like, it is usually the person, it's not the person in the back row of the church who's sitting there doing all that. It's like maybe the guy on the platform that 400 people think is the greatest thing that's ever happened to evangelicalism. Or maybe it's the guy who just got married to this bride and they're going to go off to the mission field and help kids. Like, it's the most unsuspecting person many times. And that's a really scary thing. And it's easy to become very cynical and look at everybody a second time. But I think that's important for people to realize, is like, you know, it's terrifying now watching their missions deputation video and like how much it mentions, you know, and someone got after me a little bit for this, cause like I shared a clip and they were like, you're taking out of context. But it's like the whole video is about him wanting to work with kids. Like, it says something about it being one of the, you know, and I'll play the clip so people don't, you know, if I say the wrong word, they're not going to pull that out and use that as a rebuttal. But it talks about like his number one, one of his number one priorities was working with the schools there and working with kids and coaching, you know, coaching kids in soccer and volleyball. And, you know, like that was part of the plan. And I'm sorry, I don't believe that that was just an accidental thing in his mind. I don't think it was necessarily in Abby's mind. I'm not accusing her of that at all. But in his mind, like, you can't tell me that that wasn't a intentional move, you know?
And right.
That's my opinion. And that's my, you know, whatever. Like, I know people are going to pick apart every word that I say from Harvard, but sorry, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, there was so much emphasis. And then to, for those who are listening to this point, I haven't said, you know, what's happened. But for those who are listening who haven't seen it, I mean, Webb was charged this year with child molestation, incest. I mean, he's a bad guy, yeah. You know, and again, that doesn't, there's too much strategy involved with these guys. Always. There's always more than one victim. There's always like, and he built a life for himself to have access to kids. And to me, that's a really scary thing. And it's scary because before, without knowing that information, his video just looks really noble. Like his goals look noble.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really scary. It really, really is scary. It did make me go back and relook at my life and be like, was, if this is what was the product of the teachings that I was under and he was under, who else could be like this? Who else is a victim that we don't know? You know, it's just, it makes you question everything and you start to feel like, okay, I really was in a cult. It like, it solidifies a lot of mm-hmm. things, but it tears at the foundation of my entire yeah. life. And right. so it's very, it's a weird, the last year has been very weird and crazy. And I have been a lot more focused on trying to pinpoint how to keep my kids safe and mm-hmm. how to keep my goddaughter safe. And right yeah. now it's, I'm not, they're not going to ever go to church and mm-hmm. that'll take a lot of that out.
Yeah.
But you know,
right. yeah, it's a lot to unpack, and especially when you see the responses from the church, you know, and this is where, you know, again, I never blame a church. And I, you know, at this point I've done so many interviews, like I'm sure I'm paraphrasing something someone else has said in the past. And I think maybe it was Stacy Shiflett that talked about it, but like things are going to happen in ministries. Like when you have people all in a room together or all, you know, 100 people, a couple of those people are going to be bad people. And if you have a ministry for 50 years or a company or a school, like there will be a bad event that happens at some point. And I don't hold a church accountable for that at all until they respond in a way that's negative, you know, and consistently Harvest has taken steps that I believe show victims that they don't matter and show abusers that they have a safe haven there. You know, you see this with welcoming Cameron Giovanelli and with open arms. You look at all the history of the Anchor Character Training Center. You know, you look at having a convicted sex offender living at ACTC. You look at with Jordan Webb, you know, I have the news article pulled up. They helped with his legal fees when he was posting bail. They helped pay for the fee for the lawyer. And that's not me, again, that's not me tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. Like that's, there's literally evidence submitted. It's, you can look this up. You can search for this. If you're at Harvest listening to this, which I'm sure there's some people that are, I mean, you can go and find this stuff. Literally there's a text conversation submitted and evidence by the state. Marvin Smith, the son of the senior pastor, texted to Webb, "I'm going to need to write a check for you for the lawyer fee. Pastor said it'll look better than the church being responsible for extra cost after the $25,000. Like this is tithe and offering money going to a pedophile. Like,
yeah.
And like at that point, why is anybody in a pew Sunday morning is my question. Like how do you sit there and justify that and know that, that you're literally your pastor's son and, you know, and the pastor himself had this plan of like, how do we hide this from the church that we're going to help this guy out? Like that's wild to me that they still have a congregation at all.
So an interesting thing about their offerings, when I was in college there and we ended up moving back to Fort Dodge after we got kicked out because we thought that was God's calling and it was just brainwashing. But as a married couple, how they would hold offerings, especially if there was like something specific they needed. And it's not like they would lock the doors and force people to do it, but we need to raise $2,000 tonight for this thing. And until that $2,000 is pledged by enough people in the church, they just keep asking. They won't move on service. They don't do like they.
We're going to sing Just As I Am for the next, you know, 3 hours if we have to. We're going to get this offering in.
Yeah. I personally, as a college student, remember pledging money, even if it was like $25 to something. But I felt like, oh, no one else is raising their hand right now. But this is a need that God is calling us to give to. I'll raise my hand. Okay, here, I can only give $25 because I only get $400 a month. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll do that. Right. And they guilt you and put the fear of God into you. And if you don't do it, you're not a good person. You're not a child of God or a good child of God, you know?
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of pressure. And like I said, they've kind of set the stage for this sort of stuff to happen and be explained away. What's interesting to me, and again, this was a conversation that came up last night and I was being interviewed. And so I got to think through, because usually I'm thinking through what I'm going to ask somebody. And then they were asking me questions and I was thinking about it. And I was like, it really is. I don't understand whether we're talking the Mormon Church, the Baptist Church, the fill in the blank, any organization that's covered this stuff up. What's the benefit of protecting these guys? Because like you mentioned, you having consensual sex with another adult is like, you will never be pure again. Like you are even now married. I mean, if you were to like, that would be something where like, hey, she did that. Did you guys know that? Oh, yeah. You know, that's like the scarlet letter on you. You know, if you were to be caught going to the movies, like if you were to be caught, like if you were to go to church only Sunday mornings, you know, like you are this wicked, horrible person. But then, you know, the next day after this guy gets arrested for pedophilia and incest and, you know, I mean, admitted to an affair that happened on the mission field with men on the mission field. It's like the next day, it's like, we're going to preach about grace and forgiveness and mercy. And I guess I just don't understand why there's such an outpouring of grace specifically on pedophile, because it is specifically for that category. There is this immense amount of grace, but not for any other lesser offense.
I feel it's not necessarily about giving grace to the person. It's about saving face as a church.
But don't you think it would save more, like logically following that, wouldn't it save more face to address it and say, we've found, because I feel like the community would, and we've seen this with like Stacey Shiflett, who's the only example I can think of that's actually really done this in a public way, is like the community goes like, that church, even if they go like, that church is weird and like, I wouldn't go there, whatever, like they have respect for him and that situation, how it's handled. Right. Like that's a plus positive for them.
They're not looking for the outside view. They don't care about them. They want to save them, but they don't actually care about who those people actually are.
Until they're on the inside.
Right. Until they're getting their money. But they care about how they look within their church. And when they see this prominent, perfect example be struck down, they can't handle it because they supported that. They have monetarily supported it. And that collective guilt, they can give it to God and all of that guilt goes away. So they don't care about the other people that are looking from outside the church being like, why are you protecting a pedophile? Well, in God's eyes, he's forgiven now. And Marvin Smith talked about that the night after the article came up on Facebook and it went public. And I know I sent you videos, but me and my husband were sitting there infuriated. Like Marvin Smith almost said, or basically said, no matter what you do as your pastor, I will always show you mercy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't experience mercy when I got kicked out for having consensual sex. Like you said, my husband didn't get mercy. My cousin didn't get mercy when they exercised her because she liked Disney villains. Mm-hmm. But Jordan Webb, who has hurt kids, he gets all of the mercy because that is their idol. They've made every single college student, every single young couple, married couple, they've made them look up to them. And now they've lost the trust of their, or should lose the trust of their people. But if you say, well, God wants us to forgive, that's what they're going to do because they want to please God first.
Yeah.
Jesus first, others second, yourself last.
Yeah.
That's how you experience joy.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you, so you think some of that is just, they don't want to admit that their system broke or that they were wrong. Like, do you think some of it's just literally, hey, let's not look at this because he was the golden boy. We don't want to admit that we messed up. We missed everything involving this. And there's something bad here. Like,
that's what I personally believe, because they say in church that pride is the root of all evil, the root of all sin. So in my eyes, their pride of them being this shining example to the community, like they say they are, is now gone. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I believe it's just saving face.
Yeah.
Because no other morally right person would protect someone like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's another scary story out of a organization that's flooded with them. And I appreciate you kind of sharing the perspective of what it was like inside, because again, I don't just inherently hold the church responsible when something happens. Until stuff like this happens over and over and over again, and the response is the same over and over and over again, and it's been made very clear where the church stands with this. And even with family, I mean, in many ways, you know, I have sympathy for Abby because I know how little voice women are given within this world. But also, it's very much the same as the Anna Duggar conversation, you know, a few months ago.
Yeah.
As a parent myself, like to testify that he's not a flight risk, you know, like to go out of your way to give credence to his character after this sort of stuff happens, I just can't justify that. And again, like I said with Anna Duggar, because I had people who are outside of this world in this movement say, you don't understand, they're in a cult, or you don't understand, they're brainwashed. Like, I was raised in the same environment. And the minute that I saw like child abuse being covered up, even as a 11th grader, I was like, okay, this is wrong. Like, and anyone who doesn't agree it's wrong is wrong. Like, it was a clear line in the sand. And I'm just tired of giving people a pass because, oh, they're quote unquote brainwashed, or they're like, at the end of the day, like, you have to understand, like, if someone's hurting a child, like, that shouldn't, like, I just can't give caveats for that. I can't give caveats for like, how do you, you know, oh, you don't feel like that's that big a deal, or you, you know, it's, or you feel like you need to defend that person in some way. Like, I just can't wrap my head around it. That seems to be the posture of that entire cult in the middle of, you know, in the middle of that campus. Like, it seems like it's, we're going to stand united front and protect this guy. And I don't get it, you know, for the life of me.
So also within that same sermon, you could tell Marvin Smith was trying not to specifically say what was going on and why he was preaching about this, but he also said something along the lines of, you need to continue to funnel mercy into each other because you never know when you're going to need that mercy back. And without saying it, he completely justified the crime and diminished the victim.
Yeah. Well, it's that old idea in that world of like, you fall into it, you know? And again, I've said this before, like, there's certain things you can, you know, find yourself falling into. Like, I think, you know, I think you can say that when someone, you know, builds too close a relationship and has an affair, you know, like I see there are things, there are roads that lead you to things. Like that is a true statement. There are decisions you make that become bigger decisions. That child abuse is like not on a path that any normal person can just, oh, oops, I traveled too far, you know? And I think a lot of times in IAP circles, it's like, well, he was watching a lot of pornography and, you know, and then he veered off and eventually became a pedophile, or, oh, he was, you know, he was watching the wrong kind of movies, or he was listening to the wrong kind of thing, or he was having an affair and then it kept getting worse. And you know, like that's not a trajectory thing. Like it is a, you don't fall into this, like you construct and build a life that gives you access to do this. Like it is a strategy. There's grooming upon multiple levels of this. Like it's a plan, you know? And so to treat it as though like, oh, you drank too much and now you have a drinking problem, or you were too friendly with this person at work and built a relationship and had an affair consensually with that person, which is still bad, but you know, it's still an adult, you know, like this is a totally different thing. And to see it get lumped in with this idea of like, hey, you might need this someday. It's like, I know for a fact, I'll never need that mercy. Like,
yeah.
I know for a fact that I'll never need that grace in that area ever. Like that is not a path that, no matter how far off the Christian base I got, that's not where my path is, you know?
It's a conscious decision. And even in the Bible, God tells us that we have free will.
Right.
God is never going to force us into something, and the devil is never going to force us into something. That's part of the free will. And I have been around children my entire life. Like, I am a woman that was raised in church. Never once has it ever gone through my head to do something to harm a child. It's a conscious decision that you made in that moment, and you have to be held accountable for it. Because if you're not held accountable, how are you going to ever accept that that's what you did and actually change what's going on in your brain or what's going on in your heart or your soul or whatever? Like, you have to make that conscious decision. But religion doesn't want us making conscious decisions. They want us to
suppress and conform.
Absolutely. So it's something that as humans, we have evolved to have this in us, to know what's morally right and morally wrong. People who weren't raised in church know to not hurt children. That is, that's just what that is.
Yeah.
And for him to be raised to know that children are innocent. I mean, the church is obsessed with having faith like a child and all of that. And then you go and do it. That's worse in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely does. But again, I mean, I think we'll, I think from this point on, we'll just agree. We'll just continue agreeing over the next couple of minutes. But at the end of the day, you sit there and just go, why? Like, how does this happen? Why is this happening? And the only people that will ever truly understand that is the people doing it, you know? But on the outside, when a church shows its true colors, listen. When someone shows their true colors, listen and get out of there. And I just, that's my message, I guess, to the Harvest crowd is like, what if it's your kid next? Or what if it's your, and like, you've seen how this, what if it's you next, you know, in some case, like you've seen how the church has handled it historically, like there's no reason to linger and stay and assume it's not going to be you or assume it's not going to be somebody else. It's just a question of when's the next thing. And that's, you know, I don't, you know, and I know whatever legally, you know, I don't have any info that says there's going to be a next thing, but I've just seen, speaking from opinion and experience, like there will be something else because people are going to keep flocking to that place that's safe for them as predators. But thanks again for giving kind of an insight to kind of the inner workings of the church and the school, and for taking time to do that. I know there's part of when you leave, you don't want to ever talk about it again. And then part where like you absolutely want to talk about it because it's so bizarre. There's not a lot of frame of reference for it. But thanks again for taking time to do this. I really do appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for having the opportunity to let me tell my truth and to let me stand up for what's right. And having this opportunity means so much more than you ever know. It's healed a lot of the hurt that has happened to me, because the hurt that has happened isn't justified anymore. And having that, I'm so excited for my next phase of life to be able to move forward from this, be able to put this behind me, but to still continue to fight for what's right.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes. And don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.